Hello, everyone. Welcome to Soapbox. My name is Mauro DiPasquale. Soapbox is produced right here at WCCA-TV 13, the People's Channel. Our studios are located at 415 Main Street in beautiful downtown Worcester, Massachusetts. And we are an open forum community public access media center, which means you can produce your very own TV shows here. You could take training classes. Younger persons can attend our year-round after-school youth media program and produce exciting videos. And congratulations to them, by the way, for their recent win. They're one of 10 finalists in the statewide anti-smoking, anti-tobacco public service announcement award competition. So we congratulate them for all the fine work they do. You can use our website, WCCATV.com, as an extension of our TV services here. You can post stories there. You can create your own blog or post videos, which we stream also in real time. So you can watch this program on cable or anywhere around the world over the internet. And you can download some of our programs as we make them available to you. So there are many exciting opportunities. We invite you to participate in our Community Vision News program or shows like Soapbox. And if you want to be on this program, we videotape Soapbox on the last Monday of every month, so please call 755-1880 extension 10. We invite anyone to be part of this show. And if our schedule doesn't work for you, we have literally hundreds of other programs that are available here at WCCA-TV for you to be a guest on. And that is not to say you can also produce your own TV show or present videos you may have made someplace else on the channel. That's what public access is. It's your channel, your voice, a place for you to create TV or to present TV. So without further ado, I would like to get into today's episode. We're going to learn about an interesting organization, the Institute for Global Leadership. But before I do, I want to just thank our volunteer camera person, Spirit Walker, for helping us out all day long. She's been coming in to shoot help us shoot these episodes, whether we need a multi-camera. So thanks to Spirit Walker for helping out. Joining us today are members, we have the founder and director of the Institute for Global Leadership, Virginia Swain, and she's accompanied by a recent graduate of the program, Brooke Bechara. Thank you for joining us.
Wonderful to be here.
Tell us a little bit, Virginia, about the Institute for Global Leadership. It's a nonprofit organization. Tell me all about it.
It was started on September 11th, 2001, when I happened to be in New York at the United Nations during the World Trade Center attacks, and in the days following when I was trapped in New York, because I realized in those few days how important it was to have a leadership that would respond to the crises of our time a little bit differently than we're used to adapting to things. Mm-hmm. And since then, there have been many more crises, not as bad maybe as that, but I dedicated my work to helping people develop the leaders and teams that are necessary to work with those challenges in a very supportive, compassionate, and skilled way. So mm-hmm. It's an extensive program that I've developed. I'm a refugee from the corporation. I was an HR manager in a big company, Pepperidge Farm, a division of Campbell's Soup. And for the last 20 years, I've been consulting. Mm-hmm. But this new mission came from my direct experience mm-hmm. in the UN afterwards with New Yorkers who were quite different. I happen to have lived in New York. And people act very differently in a crisis. They open their hearts to each other. They actually support each other in ways that they don't when they're not in crisis. So I was hoping to create a leadership that could help people act like that when they weren't in crisis, as well as help people through crisis mm-hmm. and change.
Yeah. Now, were you there? Were you at the towers?
No, I was in the United Nations, but everyone thought the UN was next.
Yeah.
So they evacuated very quickly. All the guards were frightened, very frightened. They said they wished they could leave too.
That must have been awfully frightening.
It was. Yes.
So I can see how that, you got stranded there
yes.
on 9/11 because of course, they shut down all the air travel. And
even the Amtrak station, we were planning to come back by train that day and couldn't.
Yeah.
So
And it became sort of a militarized zone, didn't it? I mean, yes. People getting on, when they finally did get the subways going, there were heavy military presence and...
Well, a lot of people were stuck in subways, which was terrifying for people because everything shut down. And so many, many people who normally ride on subway were not in them, so a lot of people were on the streets. But people were crying and laughing and mourning and all the emotions that you have when a crisis happens happened that day. And it was very powerful for me to
really?
Be part of that. I happened to have lived in New York during the first World Trade Center attack in 1992. I was on a bus when they attacked that day. And then afterwards, I happened to have been in New York during the blackout. So it's really been interesting for me to watch New Yorkers and be part of a scene where people actually open their hearts to one another in the midst of this.
Yeah.
And that's, I think that open-hearted leadership is part of what I was realizing was so important.
Mm-hmm. Did you feel something was lacking when you started? I mean, well, obviously this came as an inspiration, but were there specific flags that went up that you saw in the way other leaders conducted? I mean, many people praise Giuliani, for example, the
way
he handled
it. I think people did the best they could. I don't have any criticism. I just saw that. And by the way, my leadership is not to judge other people at all.
Okay, that's
it's rather
that's
to offer
skill.
Something new. And because I see the need for a different kind of leadership now that is much more about being present to each other, that has influence, because the leaders that I train and I do too, have a mission statement. We have our own one-sentence mission statement. Brooke has one. So I think that it's really important for people to have a clarity of why they're here on this, what their purpose is on this earth right now, and how they can move forward with that purpose. Because a lot of institutions, including ones that I've been in, I'm an HR manager in a big corporation, and I realize that a lot of people don't have that career opportunity to be in institutions as much as they used to. They're often people are being downsized, people are losing jobs. So it's much more important that individual employees and people have their own sense of clarity about why they're, what they're going to be doing with their life.
Mm-hmm.
And so this particular leadership is for CEOs as well as janitors. It's not for just the hierarchical leaders. It's more for anyone who wants to have influence. It could be applied in their family. It could be applied in their community, in their institution, or in a global challenge.
Mm-hmm.
I happen to work at all the levels because I think that's important. It's just as important for me to find a sense of mission in my own family with my husband and my kids that as it is to work at a global challenge. So I think that congruence and having the skills to work at all the levels is very important in this particular leadership, because if we bring a sense of our best self, and I say the best of our humanity is needed now, and that's why I don't want to criticize what happened in the past. It's more, we have an opportunity to see what is missing and how we've been developed. And I believe that there's much more to us that can be developed than has been previously allowed. So I wanted to find a way to develop people so they can see how they can be effective at all those levels and have that application be important to them. Because as you know, Maura, that look what's happening every day. We open the paper and some crisis has happened. So I think that wherever you feel your focus should be, whether it's in the community with working with teens who commit crimes and who help them move through that part of their life, or with it, whether it's in an institution as an executive where you perhaps empower other people rather than tell them what to do, because I find that people really need to feel like they're making a difference. It's part of our psyche. I'm also a therapist too. So I realize that it's so important for people to have an understanding of how to create meaning and purpose in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
So I like
Have we gotten away from that, do you think, in the American workforce? Is there been a tendency to drift away from meaningfulness? I mean, it seems to be a broader gap, you know?
I don't think people have time.
Yeah.
And part of this... Would you agree with that book?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's a huge... problem. People are so busy with their day-to-day, their lives,
their work life, keeping up with their kids, their family, their social life, that, you know, the last thing on their list is, what's the meaning of what I'm doing? It's very, it's taxing, and it's frustrating, and it's draining for people, I think, because they don't, they feel something's missing, but they don't know what it is. And actually, that leads them into self-defeating,
yeah, many times,
you know, behaviors. You get another 100 channels on your TV, or you you have some kind of addiction in your life, or, you know, something that kind of sucks your energy instead of replacing all that energy that's going out to other people.
Yeah.
So this leadership is based on a deep respect for everyone, and not, as I said earlier, not judging people.
Yeah.
It's so important that people be invited rather than judged, because I do believe that the leadership model, the top-down model, isn't working, isn't empowering people. But I think people do the best they can with that, with their busy lives. It does mean stepping off the treadmill and really reflecting on your lives. Reflection is a big part of our leadership process. And I think that reflection is something that requires discipline. That reflection is produces results, because there's a component of reflection and action that I wanted to mention. If we are in action and then we reflect on our action, then we can see, oh, that wasn't the way I wanted to live my life, you know, or that particular day.
So it comes down to, before, I want to get into that deeper with the reflective, and how do you nurture a reflective leadership. But why is it important, you know, to have leaders that have a diversity of skills, whether it be in values and experience? How do you see that?
Well, I think that one of the things that happen with reflection is that if people step off the treadmill and they look at their values and they say, wait a minute, my primary value is to value my family. That's an example. And I just did something that negated that value. And I'll give an example out of my personal life. I was a corporate executive, and my brother called me up to have lunch with me one day, and I was too busy. And the next day he was killed in a car accident. So that was my wake-up call about what's important. See, that's what I mean about clarifying my values. And I think it's really important. I hope no one has that happen, but I'm hoping that I'll invite people to reflect on those kinds of priorities. What's really important to us? You know, does our work inform our whole life, or is our work inform our family and nurture our family? We have to decide on that balance between work and family life. Mm-hmm. So essential to our health. Not only our mental health, but our physical health. Would you say?
How can it impact your health? Because many times, I probably personally know many people that are in a predicament where they'll use that expression, I'm living to work, not work to make a living. That's kind of cliche sound. But you want to tell people to follow your bliss and do what makes you happy, But then they can't, because they'll lose everything. You know, they have this big overriding fear, I think, which is, is everybody probably fears, the fear of the loss of their home, or they fear the loss of whatever it is that they have that they're clinging on to.
For me, it was the fear of loss of benefits, because I was in the corporation, and I wanted to get out after that experience, but then I was really afraid of losing my benefits, because I was so attached to them, not realizing that I could be successful as a consultant. I mean, that's what I became, but I think I had to have an understanding of what the impact of what I could do, and I had to have someone help me through those fears. And I think it's really an important point you're making, Maura, that most people don't realize they can move past their fears. I was in the Peace Corps, and I learned early on, and when I was 20, that I, when I had to jump off a high dive in Peace Corps training, I have a deathly fear of heights. I learned that I could do it. I will never do it again, Maura. But I learned that I could move through my fear And that experience really changed me. It was a defining moment of my life to realize that I could be afraid and then I could move through it and decide not to jump off high dives again. But yeah. But I'll always have fear, you know, mm-hmm. about trying new things. And that's okay. But going back to your question about the health, I do believe there are studies that show that people are much more healthy when they are enjoying their work and they're actually having fun.
Yeah.
And they're creating fun for themselves and the people they're with. I know you spoke about how your work changed after the program.
Yeah, I was teaching sixth grade at Bancroft School, and I was actually considering another career path. You know, things were going well, but something was missing. I wasn't feeling as successful as I wanted to feel, and I entered this program, and it allowed me to identify my own gifts and talents that I could bring, and the ways that I could actually be a leader. I never kind of imagined myself as a leader within the school. I thought, you know, I'm just the sixth grade English teacher. But the program helped me see the things that I could really bring and lead with. And when you know what those things are, you have a new sense of confidence, mm-hmm. and you enjoy the creative process of bringing to light what you have to give. And you're not doing it in an arrogant way or saying, you know, well, I'm so great. You're just presenting what you have, and it is good, and it's, you know, it's been mm-hmm. given to you, and your job is to give it to others. And so I experienced a total turnaround of kind of considering leaving my job to loving my job and not wanting to go anywhere else. And it wasn't, you know, I kind of thought of this program as kind of like career counseling, and I imagined it siphoning me off into a new career, but it actually changed my career from within. So it was a wonderful experience.
So specifically for you, if you can share that, what was it that you learned about yourself that you could lead with, and how did it lead you to, how did it reinvigorate?
Reinvent my teaching? Yeah. Well, it's a good question, because the thing that I identified that I could bring that was unique and really valued was gentleness, which normally we don't think of, you know, that's what we want our president to be, gentle, or this is what we want our head of school to be, gentle. But it's really important in sixth grade, you know. And also my sense of compassion for the world, and just, you know, letting other people's suffering kind of affect me is important. And so once I knew that those things were not just sort of liabilities, I'm too gentle, I'm too soft on these kids. Yeah. That's how I used to see it. I used to see it as something like, it's a burden, you know. Yeah.
And then but in fact it was a gift.
Yeah. And that kids responded to it, and that it was actually very effective in dealing even in very extreme discipline cases. Gentleness is huge. It's mercy. It's an important quality. So so once I knew what those things were, and I had identified them and kind of claimed them, I was sitting in a team meeting, and we came up with an idea for a sixth grade project where the kids would identify a social issue that they cared about, and they would research it and do some activism related to their issues. So they would write a letter to the editor, or they would do a bake sale, or they would organize an Earth Day cleanup. And they do a research component. They'd present it in an evening presentation to their parents. We got big audiences for these kids to present their work, and they had PowerPoints. And it was a beautiful experience. And each kid had the power to choose. So it's like the idea behind Virginia's leadership got transferred to all of them as well, that they could be leaders in the field that they thought was important to them. So I felt like I could honor their instincts, but also you know, guide them. What can you do about child labor? What can you do about global warming?
Yeah.
You know, because most kids grow up feeling very helpless.
Sure.
And then they turn into adults who
feel helpless. Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what, you know, kills society when
sure.
people feel
I think
helpless.
That's predominantly where we seem to be today with such lower, like, voter turnout and, you know, people just not participating or engaged.
Right.
Civically as much as
yeah, and it's not that they don't care,
right?
And it's not that they aren't aware of what's going on. I think it's really the sense of despair and sense of whatever I do is not going to make a difference, you know. And I feel like this program is designed for anyone who's feeling that way and who doesn't want to accept that reality. It doesn't believe that is reality, basically. Mm. And for anyone who's like, you know, I know there's something I could be doing, I'm just not sure what it is.
So what does it take? How do we cultivate that? This goes back to what you said earlier, reflective leadership, right? How do you do that?
It means stepping back to ponder. So part of the program includes that. Actually, we have two courses coming up, one at the United Nations. And Brooke actually went to that course, and I hope you'll tell us a little bit about what you got out of it. I like to invite Greater Worcester people to the United Nations for a few days, just to give them an experience of what it's like to look at a global crisis or a global institution from the point of view of Worcester. And how is Worcester similar or different from this? And so we're having a course June 4th through 6th, and people could register for that course. And I'm also having one at the Beechwood Hotel on June 22nd and 23rd, Friday and Saturday, called The Practice of Reflective Leadership. And that's for people who would like to have a taste of what stepping off the treadmill would be like for them right here in Worcester. Mm-hmm. So those two courses are coming up in the next month. I'm also having one in July called New Perspectives on Stress, Conflict, and Diversity. Again, from the perspective of stepping off the treadmill, pondering some of these age-old issues on stress, diversity, now very strongly connected to health, right?
Sure, absolutely.
And also what lens do we use when we look at another person? Do we look at the lens and judge the person, or do we look at the lens and say, oh my gosh, that person has something important to say, you know,
right,
from that point of view of respecting the other? So I'm pretty excited that I've pulled back a little bit from the UN. I'm not having quite as many courses there. Mm-hmm. More in Worcester. We just had a big conference that you came and filmed in May 1st with Ambassador Chowdhury.
Yeah.
It was very exciting. You had some great interns here.
Yeah, they're fabulous
job. They're wonderful.
Yeah. And they're creating, and hopefully we see that they're discovering their gifts, and that will inspire them to, you know, follow, you know, with their hearts, you know, to do the right thing. That's why we do that, you know, keep them engaged and keep them active.
But I was very impressed with them.
Yeah, we had to. Now, how long of a program is it? If somebody like Brooke enrolled, how long of a process is this to get from start to graduating?
If people start at the June course at the United Nations, then go to the one in June 22nd, 23rd at the Beechwood, and then the one in July, then they do a practicum. A practicum means very much like Brooke's sixth grade project.
Yep.
That's what her practicum was. People decide on some issue that they want to work through from the perspective of reflective leadership.
Mm-hmm.
Then in September, we're going to have a certificate ceremony at the Beechwood.
Oh, okay.
So it'll be a chance for them to, from June to September, to finish the program.
Okay, sounds great. So now if they're interested in participating with this, how can they contact you?
Well, they can call me at 508-753-4172, 508-753-4172. We have a website,
www.global-leader.org. Okay, global-leader.org. Okay.
Yes.
Great.
But I would also say that if you are interested, but you don't think you can do it all at once, I spread it out over like several years, I think.
That's true.
So it is possible to, you know, you haven't missed the boat if you have a book summer, you know.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And it's also, it's a lifelong process, you know. I feel like I'm still in it and still, you know, cultivating this idea of reflection and, you know, bringing my best self to my life. So, yeah, it never ends.
And I think it's important to know, too, that in your work, you work with individuals and as well as team groups, too.
So I work with organizations and groups.
And groups can be, can go through a sense of this reflective cultivation, I guess you could call it, reflective leadership.
I want to help people find their life purpose and move forward with confidence in right now, because it's so essential for people to claim that part of themselves. Mm-hmm. Because often people are reactive to crises rather than proactive. Mm-hmm. And I think you would probably agree with me that this is gives a different perspective on that. It gives people a chance to act with confidence. I'd like to reiterate Brooke's point that people can take one course. Mm-hmm. They don't have to take the whole program.
Right.
If that's what is the best
thing. And that's how I started. I started with one course that I thought would be interesting. And that really woke some things up in me, and I was like, this is appealing. And I ended up getting a generous grant from Bancroft School to complete the rest of the certificate program. So once I had a taste, then I knew that it would be worth it.
Is this something that's affordable for most people?
Well, we work with people on that. If they can't afford the whole certificate, then I do work with them and try to help them.
Scholarships.
We have some scholarships. Also, people can pay in installments. I find that if people really want to do it, you know, then I help them.
There's a way.
It's always a way.
Yeah, that's very good to hear. Yeah. And this will have global, and we only have like about 20 seconds, but this can actually have not only local impact, but global impact.
Oh, absolutely. One of the things that happens in the UN course is people have a sense of what it's like to be a global citizen and how you can act from that place in Worcester. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. It opens your eyes to the broader work that's being done and how you can contribute to that.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're going to thank you for joining us. We're out of time. I want to thank you both, Virginia and Brooke, for joining us. And it's the Institute for Global Leadership. And folks can contact you through that number, 753-4172. Thank you for joining us.